If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Welcome to Star Piece, part of GoCast Podcast, where we get to know your favorite personalities and leaders in the world of Pokemon Go just a little bit better. I'm your host, Chris, and I get to say, as always, because now we're establishing a bit of a pattern, my co-host, Lachlan.
Is that me? Oh, hello.
I hope so. Otherwise, I missed something along the way, but I think so. Can you reassure me? Are you, in fact, Lachlan?
Yes, I still have a pulse. I think
that's great.
Yeah,
that's great. Well, geez, let's not get into the philosophical argument of after that ends, if you're still Lachlan or not. Anyway, speaking of deep thoughts and good conversations, we've got our second guest here today, Alfindiol. Hello, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you two?
Doing great. Very happy.
Yeah. Well, it feels like I've just spent the last 5 hours with you, Alfindiol, because I woke up very early this morning and then my phone goes beep, Alfindiol's gone live. And I'm like, why not?
Why not? You know, just keep the party rolling, right?
What else do you do at 5 a.m.?
Sleep. The answer is sleep.
Pre-game and interview podcast. That's five hours from then, obviously. All right. Well, before we really get started here, I mean, I suppose it is also sort of the general purpose first question. But Alfindiol, what is your deal, man? And I don't mean that in a really standoffish way. It could be whatever you're looking for.
Well, I was about to say, I'm like, wow, I mean, I could pull out a dossier for my shrink, but I don't know that that's really what this is about.
It could be.
What is my deal? Well, my deal is that I'm an adult man who plays Pokemon on the internet for money. I mean, at the end of the day, I guess that's my deal. I'm living the life that 12-year-old me would have really liked to live if this was an option for 12-year-old me, but and I'm too old for that to be the case.
I love it.
Is that just Pokemon Go, or do you branch out to the other games? Because I did see you doing a little bit of variety with some Scarlet and Violet today.
Well, yeah, I've streamed other stuff. I do usually stream a little bit of like periphery Pokemon content. I'll usually play the main series games when they come out. I've played like pinball and the old TCG game. I've streamed some non-Pokemon stuff too. I did a Stardew Valley playthrough like a couple years back. Played some Animal Crossing when that was the big thing. I'm kind of into comfy cozy like simulation style games on the side. It's something that I enjoy, but mostly just have been playing Pokemon Go and primarily just doing PvP 90% of my streams since I started, and have mostly sort of taken that from when before we had a GBL and a way to play people on stream to now where, you know, we can actually queue up and stream like regular competitive gamers. Having the ability to like queue into random battles is something that when I first started didn't exist and has been it's real nice. If you were struggling to find content, you now have a pretty reliable way to find some of it.
Yeah, I mean I remember back in those early days, I think the interview that we have with you on GoCast proper was prior to GBL, and you were really quite creative with the sorts of things you did. You did like a lot of like co-streams and invented games and stuff to play. So really quick though, before I ask you all about that, when we say that you're streaming online, we mean Twitch in particular, right?
Yes. I do have a YouTube channel. I do put stuff up, which
and
is
are
primarily,
you on X.com?
I mean, you could find me on X/formerly known as Twitter, or really any platform. I have an Instagram. I think I have a TikTok that I don't really upload too much, but like every platform, basically you'll find me. under the Elfindiol banner, given that it's a nonsense word. So no one's ever taken it. If you just Google search Elfindiol, anything you find is going to be me. Which so, is maybe not the best thing to tell everybody, but it is true.
Was it like a RuneScape name or something back in the day you made up? Where did this come from?
It was the name of my first Dungeons and Dragons character.
I was so close, man.
You were very close. It's literally just, you did what every middle school kid who needed Dungeons and Dragons names did. You opened up Lord of the Rings, you found a name, and then you changed some letters.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it turns out that was a pretty surefire way to come up with something that wasn't being used anywhere. And, you know, over the years, it just became like, well, I don't want to think about a username that's like, oh, that's taken. Oh, that's taken. Screw it. This is never taken on any platform. So I'll just use it. And I regret it every day because it's irritating to pronounce and I have to spell it for people. Like, oh, you make YouTube videos, what's your YouTube channel? I'm like, give me a pencil or a pen or something. I have to like write it down.
And the shorthand version, Alf, is synonymous with a Muppet. That's before our time.
True.
Yep.
An acronym for alien life form.
That's right. Beloved,
that's
though,
always taken.
So that's good.
Beloved, despite
I
his...
didn't actually know what that's what Alf stood for.
Yeah. He eats cats, he's an alien life form.
This is the Australian in me. It's okay.
Oh my gosh, yeah. We could talk about the Noid too and really throw you for a loop.
Oh my god.
All right. Anyway, bringing it back. So yeah, we're doing really creative stuff prior to GBL having matchmaking, just kind of ready at your fingertips for a stream. So do you want to share some of that with us? I mean, you had quite the library of activities, but like, what were your favorite ones?
Yeah, I mean, the old rhythm was kind of funky because, you know, we're talking late 2019. So sort of about a year into PvP, there's obviously established communities at that point. You know, we had an established online community where we were doing tournaments and there was a good sort of there was some interest brewing, but not really anything that had brought us all together. So we would do a lot of at the time the auto recommended function worked really well and would pick a very narrow selection of, but random and so that was pretty much for many of us was what we did. There were streams where I probably did 4 to 5 hours of auto recommended random battles with viewers, which at the time did require you to be friends for 30 days. So a lot of times when I started, I didn't have too many people on my friends list. So there was this whole thing where like, oh yeah, add me. And then we have to interact for 30 straight days.
Yeah.
And then we'll be able to battle on stream.
Yeah. It's not even that it's just 30 days. Yeah. You had to do it every day. Right. And some people just can't do it, myself included.
Yeah.
It was a whole thing. Oh man.
But it was like a whole, like, I remember we used to like celebrate battle day for people and be like, oh, it's your day. You get to battle. And we would like finally do it, but it would take a month. So it was like, I found your stream. It was cool. We should battle. It's like, cool.
See you in a month.
And you know, we did a lot of that. I set up like a randomized theme wheel that has, you know, stupid ideas on it, which range from stuff like, you know, we were doing stuff like you know, psychic cup well before that, like, oh, only psychic tempo. But we also would do like really, really off the wall stuff, and there would be things like you know, Pokemon you could eat, or Pokemon that look like pillows. And so we would have like a combination of like sort of like standard construction stuff, and then we'd have like really off the wall sort of stupid themes, and it would give you kind of an excuse to like throw down in a battle with Pokemon that you wouldn't normally use. And so, you know, because at the time your content competitively was just Sylph, we would do Sylph practice battles usually, like when a new format would come out and stuff, we'd be like, hey, you know, the next format is this, let's do practice battles together and learn a little bit and talk about it. But you could only do that so much before you would get bored of it to an extent, or like you kind of have it where you're happy. So that was where we sort of started coming up with a lot of these really silly ideas. The only one that's really persisted, like we still do these battles, like I will do viewer battles on occasion. The only one that's persisted is Trade Wars, which is the trading / drinking game stream that we came up with, where we just arbitrarily assigned points to various appraisals. And so we just max out our trades and just keep track of the star ratings of each of the trades, and one of us wins.
I love the Trade Wars streams, and it's actually my favorite one of your VODs to go back and watch, because you'll often start the Trade Wars a little later in the day, so I can jump in and sometimes catch the end of it as I'm waking up and having breakfast. But if I'm just looking for some sort of podcast-esque content, and I've run dry of the plethora of podcasts that we have in the space now, I will pull up a VOD of your Trade Wars and just play it when I'm driving around doing a spotlight hour or doing a random grind, as events like to start at the end of the week now, or just things like that. And it's good content to have on and have a bit of fun. And it might not be suitable for all ages all of the time, just for our family listening at home. But if mum and dad, or aunt and uncle, or mum and mum, or dad and dad, or whatever your family structure is like, want to listen to something a little bit more fun, definitely recommend it.
Yeah, and it's one of the reasons that I really enjoy it as much as I do is because it's something I can't do alone. So much of streaming, yeah, there's people in chat and stuff, but like so much of it is solo. It's really cool that those have been something that our local community has always been excited about. So I've got a couple local friends who will... I need a trading partner, obviously, so we'll always have a guest on for those. And we've got sort of a rotating crew of locals who are, you know, have great personalities of their own, but don't want to stream. They have no interest in creating content, but they like coming on once or twice a month and being a part of it. And it's a lot of fun. And it's just an extension of what we do as a local community by default. You know, after community day, we all sat down, you know, we sat down for food, got some drinks, and maxed out our trades. And it's something that we just do after events. We've always done it. And it's fun to be able to brag about winning a Trade Wars, which there's nothing to brag about. It's random. That doesn't
it's
change
like
the fact
the
that I have a disproportionately high win rate on Trade Wars, despite the fact that it's random. I don't know why. I just do.
Maybe it's because you're in them every time. So statistically speaking, you have the better chance of rolling the better numbers more often.
You would think, but I have, for example, because we actually have a spreadsheet that tracks every single Trade Wars we've ever done.
Oh my
gosh. I have a community
member
who has just been logging all of them. Every bit of stats she can find, everything.
Wait, who is this?
It's one of our community members. Her name is Zan, and she's local as well.
Okay.
It's not that community member. No.
No.
Although she seems to be everywhere.
It's a person we know.
Yes.
It's a person we know, and she's lovely. But she's been tracking them, and so we have, for example, like a history of them. And so, like, for example, I have like three of the top five ever highest scores, which makes sense because I'm on all the time. I also don't have any of the lowest scores though.
Oh, okay.
So, like, I just do disproportionately well. You would think that I would have leveled out because I'm on all of them, right? My score should be as close to average as possible, but I'm still, like, in most metrics doing better than people who are on less frequently.
Blessed.
Which is great. You know, I'm just absolutely blessed on Trade Wars, apparently, so...
What people don't know is that you're actually on a 5-minute delay on stream and you can edit these things on the go. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just splicing in better Pokemon on my end. It's very clever, but the trades are actually a video on my end.
Gotcha.
I'm not actually doing anything.
So what would be your like best received Pokemon from a Trade Wars event? And like also to you, Chris, like what's the favorite, like, rarest thing you've got from a trade, like stat wise?
So we've done in the 3 or 4 years we've been doing this, I guess it's 4 years now, there has been 3 Shundos, and one of them, the first one was mine, and I have a Shundo level 1 Jolteon that I got on a Trade Wars. Unfortunately, the others I did not receive. I gave away two. I've given away a Shundo Turtwig on a non-guaranteed lucky trade.
Ooh.
And I gave away a Shundo Corsalia.
Wow.
So, there's been some real good trades, but there's been 3 Shundos. There's one person in our crew who has not yet received a Shundo. So We get to hold that over his head every time he's
on. Oh, no. Oh, there's just, like, not even anything we can do about it. It's great.
Right.
You were one IV point off giving me a Shundo when I tracked down your old apartment. And I still have that 98% shiny Jolteon in my bag.
You gave me, and Chris, you gave me a Hundo Pawnyard in New York, right?
Yeah. I'll have you know, by the way, that I think you're one of maybe three people in the history of me playing this game that I've ever maxed out trades with. Ever. Because you're like, hey, you want to trade? I'm like, no, in my brain. But I'm like, I'm going to say yes because... Yeah, I want to. I want to. Why want not? To. You know, like just because, like, it's the tedium in my ADHD, right? It's good practice to sort of go through it.
We get to do an actual, factual, non-ironic thanks, Niantic, because that trade war, the trade animation speed up, is legitimately. I know there's a huge section of players who probably don't notice it because they're not engaging with that feature every day. But for someone like me who maxes out trades three or four times a week.
Mm-hmm.
It saves an immense amount of time. It is a great update. Like, sure, would it be better to batch trade and all these other things? Yeah, but I'll take just a 50% increase in the speed of the trade. That's been a great update for us locally.
I really haven't traded since. Yeah, I've only heard good things.
Oh, yeah, it still hurts me inside because sometimes it still goes through too fast. It gets trading cooldown. I'm like, no, the trade's done. Let me back in.
No, it's done. I want to go.
To answer your question, Lachlan, before I forget, well, I don't have many trades because I just don't trade very much. I did get a lucky Hundo
Klefki from Zoe Two Dots.
It was also Pokedex. Yeah, it was in Seattle. Oh, yeah, I don't have to say anything. Why'd you even ask? You knew the answer.
Because you know why? I said to Zoe when she was in Brisbane last, I said, oh, so I'm thinking about doing this thing with Chris. And she said, oh, I love Chris. I gave him a lucky Klefki.
Because people in the comments of that video were like, that Klefki guy was really happy.
But that's the first thing she thinks about when it comes to you, Chris.
Good. That's fine. Hey, it's better than, man, I can't stand that guy. You know, like, hey. All right. So we've got a handle on who you are, Ken, to a degree. But I like the way that Lachlan wrote this in here. Why is Alfindiol? Why? Yeah, what's the deal here?
I mean, so if you go back like 4 billion years or so, there was some sludge and, you know, lo and behold, here we are.
And somehow trade wars.
Somehow trade wars. I'm sure that whatever random force created this did not anticipate that what we would do with our intelligence is this, but
agency was a bad choice. Yeah,
it really was. It was a mistake. Why do I do this? Why am I? So I have a background in before all of this, before like
the before times,
the before times.
There was time before
one, the real, the before times in the sense of before COVID and before times before like Pokemon Go to an extent. My background is in live performance and marketing. In particular, my career before all of this was in bar trivia. I think we've talked about this before, but, you know, I worked for a long time for a national company here in the States that does bar trivia. And so I've hosted trivia. I hosted a bar here in Seattle, which a lot of folks came to for GoFest. I've been there for almost 10 years. My 10 year anniversary will be next year, which is rad. And I was that company's marketing director. I kind of did a whole bunch of jobs for them, but like I have a theater background. I have a theater degree from university.
Theater degree.
Woo. Look how far we've come. My teachers would be so proud.
Our mind is not proud. He's like, why aren't you singing anymore? I'm like, it's a long story.
Yeah, about that. I was no, none of my teachers ever thought I was going anywhere. So, but, you know, that was my background. And, you know, I got into Pokemon Go the same way so many people did, which was I liked Pokemon as a kid, hadn't really kept up with it, but the game's on my phone now, so I'll try it. And of course, you know, hooked like everybody else because it's just a great concept. And realistically, even when it's not executed perfectly, it's such a good concept that it just makes sense. When I walk around, I like to catch Pokemon. Duh. And over time, like I do with everything, I got kind of hyper fixated on Pokemon Go. and learned way too much about it and became kind of that guy locally that like whenever anyone had a question, they would just ask me.
I'm still
like,
that
this guy,
guy
knows. He'll know.
Like, even and to this day, I'll get asked questions like, oh, Lachlan, what's this feature? I'm like, what? Like, they put out a vlog 2 minutes ago. Can you just summarize it for me? And I'm like, what?
I've certainly not kept up with some of that stuff. But when battling sort of showed up, I gave it a try and was like, oh, this is perfect. Like, this is exactly what I like, and got very, very into battling and then into the Sylph community when they started talking about launching the Sylph Arena. And our local group here was made up of folks. We ran some of the very, very first beta test Sylph tournaments locally here. And we were one of the first groups that like started running regular tournaments, and we were pretty influential in like how that rule set came to be, with a couple of our community organizers becoming main contributors to the like the Sylph rules team and stuff. And that was really cool. And I was absolutely hooked on it. I played a ton. At that point, I joined Go Stadium, which was the only game in town when it came to remote tournaments at the time. And just through that, met so many people and kind of fell into streaming from there. I mean, my first streams were all Go Stadium streams, essentially. I was a producer with them for a while. I was on air talent for them. And then at some point I was like, I should also stream on my own channel, because why not? It'll be fun. And I got here and it was fun. It was like, yeah, this is cool. At that time, an average Twitch stream was like 25 viewers. Nobody was really successful in that space. There were basically no one streaming. And then GBL hit, and then pandemic hit. I lost my job, and here we are. I basically, you know, at that point, things had sort of, they had a pretty good trajectory. I was doing really well. And with the pandemic kind of killing the industry that I worked full time in, it became time to like, well, I guess I'm going to give this the old college try when it comes to full time. And I've been essentially creating content full time since.
Now, I think the next logical question is, how is Elfindiel? Are you okay?
You hear that I've been creating content full time for going on 3 years, and you're like, are you okay? Are you sure you're okay?
The pandemic is over. We can go outside again.
Which is like sort of like an inside baseball sort of content creator question in a way. But also, if you've been consuming content of any creator consistently for a number of years, at some point in time along the way, the I need to take a break, or I'm burning out, or something topic comes up. So I think regardless of where you come from, this is a good question, you know, keeping it together, holding it down over there.
Ultimately, yes. I think like from a personal mental health, physical health standpoint, I'm good. A+, thumbs up. Like things are good. We've got a lot going our way here locally. I think for me, the biggest stuff right now when it comes to how am I is I'm not what I would call at peak in love with Pokemon Go right now, and especially not with Go Battle League and the PvP scene. It's not to say I don't still harbor great feelings of, you know, happiness sometimes, but there are a lot of days. I think anyone who's been watching my stream lately has noticed that it's been quite a few days since the last time I did an entire day of GBL battles. Yep. And some of that is just, it comes and goes in interest. And I'm the kind of person who will find an interest, hyperfixate, and then move on.
Mm-hmm.
I might not totally move away from something, but like my hyperfixation right now is not really on Pokemon Go PvP. It hasn't been for a while because I definitely struggled with it a little bit and just found that it was not necessarily the best for my mental health to be all in on it. But realistically, this season of GBL is a little bit tiresome to me. The formats have been not great, and we've got nothing new, really. And we've got kind of these long stretches. Like right now, I feel like we've just in a long lull where it was like, I've played the same. Nothing I'm playing, it feels fresh right now. I'm really looking forward to Halloween Cup when that drops, because it'll feel different. Mm-hmm. But like this stretch through like Sunshine Cup and Open Leagues has been kind of exhausting.
So
I'm just happy they changed Boomburst again.
But you know what they haven't done with Boomburst? Thank you for bringing it up, Chris. There are still two Pokemon that can learn Boomburst in the main series games that they haven't given to it in Go. Swellow and Chatot.
Well, they're gonna get
justice for Chatot. Justice for Swellow.
They're gonna get full Boomburst on everything. But yeah, I would like. I don't know. I'm a little bit at that point where I'm just a little tired of playing the same stuff.
Yeah.
And this is kind of come in, like, I get a lot of questions about, I haven't really been participating in the Play Pokemon circuit, which is exciting. And I'm so happy that we're on the world circuit, but I don't want to play Open Great League, because Open Great League has, I know they've shifted it, but it's been Open Great League more or less the whole time. And yeah, it's kind of been Open Great League before that too. And yeah, things change a little bit. We get a new tool here or there. Yay, Gligar or something like that. But at the end of the day, Garmin, like, which, I find that at some point I need more novelty than purely Open Great League. And I think that that's been a big factor in me not wanting to really dive into play events, is simply put, it, regardless of the minor tweaks to the meta, it's still just a format we've been playing. Metacham has been good since on and off since I started playing PvP. Like, I played a tournament in 2019 on the day Metacham got Power Up Punch, and Metacham was good, and that was in 2019. It's been there the whole time, right? And some of these Pokemon have come in and out, but ultimately, for the most part, Open Great League has been kind of static the whole time. And it's kind of always going to be, because you're limited by Pokemon stats and typings, and there's only so much you can do to really shake that up. I don't even think it necessarily needs to be shaken up. I just think, as somebody who's seriously competitive, I grow tired of the same thing over and over again. And if I were to put in a pie in the sky wish list item for that, a format that actually rotates or changes, like you have in VGC, when a new game comes out, not everything is legal all the time immediately.
Mm-hmm.
You play like a couple different limited formats leading up to what is eventually everything's fair game. I think play needs something like that. I think we need something where the format changes on occasion and gives you a reason to relearn some things, and not necessarily just, hey, I already know how some of these Pokemon play, those are the matchups.
Yeah, and I have them built, because resources is such a huge thing when it comes to decision making with that, you know. So
I won't discount the fact that Pokemon Go is built differently from these other games when it comes to what it takes to participate. It's the number one hurdle for new players getting into the game. But at the same time, like, there's got to be a way that we can get a format at the Play Pokemon circuit that can include some Pokemon that are not the same 25 that we've seen over and over and over again for the last 4 years.
Yeah. And as someone who is going to a second regionals this November, because frankly, we've had three in Australia so far in two seasons. So I'm pretty fortunate to be able to go to another one for Pokemon Go. Mm-hmm. And we've nearly sold out on that. And the Brisbane community is really getting really excited for it, because this is basically their first opportunity, because the first one was sprung on them with 2 weeks notice. But to prepare, I said, right, I'm going to try and do as many GBL Great League sets as I can when Great League's in rotation. Started the season off really strong. I got to 492 wins on that research. I'm still at 492 wins on that research. Sunshine Cup, my ELO took a 500-point dive into the 1700s, because Ultra League and Sunshine Cup, I said no. Got it back up with Master League, and I'm like, okay, I just need a break from this. This is causing unnecessary stress. I'll just rather open gifts from people.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Don't worry. I open Ken's gift. He's fine. He's good at gifting.
No, we're one away from best. We haven't for a while. We're doing like a standoff.
You know? I don't care. You do whatever you want. I
keep forgetting to talk to you about it.
Why don't you two both open your games right now and do a battle while we talk about the next segment?
No, we're not going
to
do a battle. What? I'm over my quota. I did a battle yesterday. I'm done for the year.
There you go. But yeah, I definitely talk about this a lot on stream. It's something that I think is important for players to maybe understand, is that fatigue is real. And like, if there's ever a time when battling isn't fun to you, stop battling. That's really it. Like, that's the end. That's the end all be all of the whole thing. If this isn't fun, it's a game. And it should always in your brain. You could take it seriously. It's not wrong to enjoy dedicating yourself to getting better at a thing, right? I think sometimes like there's this weird thing where it's like, well, you either have to take it super seriously to the point that like it's rage inducing. I remember I want to say it's a stupid what's his ninja quote where he's like, if you don't get mad when you lose a game, that means you're not serious about it. You're not good enough.
Yeah.
Like, which is nonsense. That's super unhealthy and not correct. But at the other time, there's also like when I say things like, yeah, like make sure you take your breaks. Like if it doesn't feel fun, if it's not, then people will be like, well, but how am I supposed to get better? I'm like, no, you have to understand it's a balance, right? Like understand yourself, what you're getting out of it, what you hope to get out of it, and then make sure you're developing a healthy relationship with it. And I think that's a super important thing. And it's very easy for competitive minded people to lose track of their relationship with something.
And that could apply to all of Pokemon Go. Like if there's an event you're just not vibing, it's okay to, I know it might hurt, it's okay to not play the game for a day.
Correct.
It's okay literally to miss that spin streak.
Do not need streak. To log into Pokemon Go every day if you don't feel like logging into Pokemon Go every day. Like it's not going anywhere. The game is fine, and it will be there when you're ready to come back to it. I think if more people could really take an honest look at their relationship with Pokemon Go, they probably would realize that there are elements of it that are less than healthy. I've said that before, and I kind of stand by it. I know that I'll get a few side eyes about it, but like ultimately most of the behavior I see about Pokemon Go from players who play a lot borders on unhealthy, and it veers into unhealthy a lot. Sometimes it's great, but it does veer that way, and I think most people could probably take a breath and think about, hey, what is my relationship with this game? What am I getting out of it? And should I consider figuring out how to do that? Because I think I see a lot of people playing the game and not having fun. It's an obligation.
I found recently that I hit that breaking point. It was probably about 6 or 7, 8 months ago. And that's just where I was at in life. But I took the step back. I said to my friends, look, just for the next little while, if I'm by myself, I'm probably not going to open the game. So if you want me to open the game, we're playing it together. So you just let me know what we're doing, where we're going, what park we're walking through, etc. Because for me, that's what I needed. And for a lot of people, especially now that we have the Go++ device, getting people back into that I'm always in the game mindset.
Right.
It's okay to leave it at home every now and again. It's not the end of the world if you miss one night of sleep and don't get 2 extra buddy hearts. It's okay.
It's not okay.
Given how many I need for that gold platinum medal, 2 buddy hearts a day would be awesome.
Well, look, as I've got friends who have that medal platinum and still do their buddies. And I'm sitting here at 70 best buddies, and I think that's a really good achievement compared to 90% of players.
Yep.
And I just cycle through 2 or 3 a day.
I really think, again, I think it's just about, there's so much to do in Pokemon Go at this point, and there's so many different ways to enjoy the game, that I personally think that what many players need to do is figure out which of those ways they actually like, and then lean into them. Like, I'll give you an example. This is a good segue to something I actually like about Pokemon Go, and is, I think, a segue into a later question, so I'll just do it.
Oh, you're a professional.
Oh, okay.
So about a year and a half ago, so I love to travel. Travel has been my thing for a long time. And I had a really good clip on traveling. I've been trying to get out and go to as many different countries as I can and that kind of stuff.
Spending as many unique Pokestops as possible.
Well, we hadn't found that yet. I'd forgotten about that badge. But after the pandemic wind down, the first trip I took was for the Safari Zone in Spain. I'd never been to Sevilla, and I was like, well, shoot, like I want an excuse to travel. Been cooped up because of this pandemic thing. Let's go. And while I was on that trip, I was reminded that the game tracks the unique number of Pokestops you've spun. And that's what the halo is. When you look around and you see a Pokestop with a halo, it means that you've never gone there. You've never spun that Pokestop. And while I was there, I was like, I have like a 4,000 some unique Pokestops. Huh. It'd be cool to hit 5,000 while I'm here. I'm traveling. And I got really, really, really motivated. And in this case, what motivated meant was, hey, what if I explore these cities more? What if I go more places? And over the course of that trip, I kind of was like, this is like legitimately the most fun I've had playing Pokemon Go in a long time. And it sort of became a thing. Well, you know, maybe what I'll do is I'll double this number by the end of the year. I'm at 4,000 some now. I'll get to 10,000 before the end of the year. That'll be a fun challenge. It'll be something to challenge myself to. So I did it. I made some videos about doing it as well. I did some travel videos where I focused on travel and food while, you know, spinning Pokestops and playing the game, which was really cool. And, you know, had some good success. I hit my goal and took a little bit of break. And then I got to 2023 and go, you know, that was really fun. What if I go from just over 10,000 to 25,000 in the next year? Which has been really fun, but might have been a little more than I had anticipated. I'm at 24,000 and change. I'll hit it when I'm in Mexico City at the end of the month.
Just for reference, for those of you listening in the future, it's October 16th right now, date of recording.
I thought it was the 17th.
It depends on where you are, I suppose. No,
time is relative.
Oh, is that why there's a Tardis over again. There? So we've just done some brief time traveling. Okay, that's all right.
Yeah, no, I started the year around 13,000, I think. I kind of smashed the goal the first year. It was much... I had a couple really big trips planned. And then the real kicker this year, the I banked everything basically on Japan and while I was there. And so in the time that I was in Japan, I was there for just about 2 weeks. I spun just about 5,000 new stops, which was averaged out to almost 500 unique stops a day.
Wow,
for the entire
man.
Duration of the trip in 90 plus degree weather with 90 plus degree humidity. So I very nearly ran, like walked myself.
So that for those ragged, listening at home, yeah. That's yeah, cooler than I'm currently right now in this room.
It was, yeah, it was miserable, and I'm sorry.
Oh, it's okay. If people have been watching the video version and watching me squirm around with one of my hands, this is another good reason to check out the video version on Spotify and YouTube. Mm-hmm. But I've got 4 different ice packs out of the freezer, which I'm just rotating through the back of my shirt.
Sounds lovely.
They're like battery packs.
It's
nice and cold and rainy here right now, so it's definitely getting into fall winter weather in Seattle.
So how did New York compare after to the amount of unique stops that you got? Because New York is it's no slouch when it comes to POIs. So I'm really curious, how much did you rack up there?
New York was, I was in only New York for Thursday, Friday, Saturday, like 4 whole days basically. Yeah. The difference in New York compared to Japan, one was the weather was much, much, much better for play. The biggest hurdle I ran into in Japan was never availability of Pokestops. I could always find a pocket of a big pocket of new stuff, especially given that I was spending time in big cities. Osaka, Tokyo, Kyoto were all big cities.
Yeah.
But the problem was I could not really play the game. Because I like to play on foot. One of the things that like I kind of this challenge for me is a lot of exploring and actually going. I could easily jump on like a bus and just let the bus drive me from one end of town to the other and spin everything along the way. And it would be better and faster. I've done it a couple times. I did it one time in Singapore for That Safari Zone. It was a really crappy rainy day. And so I challenged myself to see how many unique stops I could spin without going outside. Singapore has all these like crazy mall complexes and all that. So I like got into one of them and like walked around, and then I got on a bus that drove me around. I spun like 450 unique stops without getting outside, without getting rained on basically. And that was kind of fun. But generally like one, I didn't see a lot of the stuff that I explored. Like I was kind of on a bus or in a mall. And two, like, I don't know, it just feels more like a challenge to actually do that walking. So in Tokyo, in Osaka, I did a lot of nights. Like it'd be like 8 p.m. sun's going down, I can go outside. And so I was really limited. New York, the weather was beautiful. So I actually got to play like all three GoFest days. I played each one in kind of a different part of town. And so those 3 days, I hit about the same number. I hit about 500 stops a day, despite the fact that the density was not nearly the same, which has everything to do with sponsored stops. Japan has like three or four active sponsor arrangements going on right now, and they just absolutely blow up the number of stops you see. Like if you see any of the screenshots that people took, like right from main Osaka area, if you look, like 60% of those are sponsored because they have a sponsorship with a travel company or a bus company or something. And it's like just tons of those around where that train station is for some reason. And, you know, that there's Family Mart and there's a couple other small sponsorships that just like allow you to have more stops per cell than you can in New York. Yeah. New York, every cell is full, but the only sponsorship is Starbucks. Basically.
Yeah, but sponsored stops bypass the limitations of the cells, right?
They do. They
started changing it recently where it doesn't, the sponsor stop sometimes makes the existing locations disappear. But say the ones that Niantic will put up temporarily for an event, those ones don't. But
okay.
In areas which, to quote a past life of mine, were manipulated by community members in the Wayfarer system, sometimes the manipulations to those cells go away when a sponsored location comes into the mix. To sort of help to balance out the playing field.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Oh, Wayfarer. I know submitting points of interest is currently a hot button issue, but just to share, while I was in the Netherlands recently, my partner works for a company there.
You would have definitely had your nomination approved in the last couple weeks.
Yeah, I know. That's one of the reasons I did it. But while I was in Utrecht, I was walking around and I saw basically a memorial that was like, this should be a Pokestop. I don't know why. So I double checked, like, it's not even a point of interest. Like, it's insane. So I submitted it and it got approved. But just in case people are like, oh, don't submit. You're not going to catch a ban for submitting a real thing. Just follow the steps. Oh, this should be a Pokestop. Is it in the system already? No? Sweet. Follow the instructions and submit. I don't really know why people are a better podcast
suited to answer those sorts of questions. And if you want to learn the answers to that, definitely have a listen to Wayspotters.
It's almost like I knew how to segue you right into a plug. I told you I'm in marketing.
I'm not there anymore, but Chris and Jamal are doing a good job. And not this Chris, a different Chris.
Different Chris.
There's a lot of Chris.
Good name. Good name.
They're good at podcasting. Yeah, but, that's what we've learned.
Wow. You know, I like Chris. I think he's good. I think the short version is lots of misinformation mixed with people not knowing what they're doing. And, so, you know, whatever.
If it makes anyone feel any better, I am an idiot, and I successfully submitted a decent point of interest while visiting Utrecht. So, you know what? If you see something out there that you think should be a point of interest, I promise you, if you just read and follow the instructions and submit it, the worst that'll happen is they say no.
The best thing to do is to actually read the help that pops up on screen. It's like recently we had that timed research during Detective Pikachu, and because everyone just mashes through, they just saw choose Snivy, Rowlet, or Sudowoodo. Yep. But if you read what Willow was saying and you picked Sudowoodo, you got rewarded. So there's this for everyone out there who just spams the text during a special research.
Wait, were you supposed to choose Sudowoodo to get something better?
Yeah, because you were solving a mystery. And
oh no!
Sudowoodo gave you an extra encounter with Detective Pikachu.
The funny thing is, you didn't even have to read the text. Shoot. If you had just read the part at the top before choosing a Pokemon, it also made it obvious it was Sudowoodo.
Ken, don't talk to me. Stop bullying me.
But we've been given those enough times where when you choose one, you're just, it's like, choose one, you'll get an encounter with one of these things probably.
Yeah.
So everyone just chose the one that they wanted.
I just choose the one I like, you know, yeah. And out of those three, Rowlet was the clear winner for me. So, you know,
but
the story be darned.
You missed out on a single Detective Pikachu encounter. That's
what I'm 25 experience.
My heart breaks. Yeah, goodness me.
No, you still got the experience. You got the 20 experience.
Did everyone get the 20?
Yeah,
okay, good.
Yeah. The task was spin a single stop, and I got 25 experience. I thought it was the funniest single step I'd ever seen in my life, and it makes so much more sense now.
Yeah, you were supposed to get a Pikachu, but you didn't solve the mystery, so Detective Pikachu was disappointed in you.
They need to add voice acting. They really need to add voice.
But you still wouldn't have the game unmuted. Let's be real.
I want it to be like AI Microsoft Sam or something, just like coming out of Willow's mouth.
There's a playing with game audio on is a pretty significant. It has some advantages in PvP, and I have never ever in 1,000 years done it. It's one time someone just asked me like, why don't you play with like the game sounds on? Like it was like, I would literally rather not play the game. Like, I don't care. If it means that I miss a fast move every once in a while to not hear Registeel's beep, boop, beep, 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 then I'm happy. Like, I'm just telling you, is there's no way that it improves my experience.
Oh, man.
As someone who's been using Water Gun Lantern, I need the sounds to count because
squirt,
I don't
squirt,
know
squirt,
how many times
squirt, 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 squirt.
I need that.
If I could record my own sounds, you know what? I'm into it, but only
That'd
if I can record my own sounds.
Those sounds that they have in them in the game are like super compressed, and you can tell. Yeah. And if they were higher quality, simple sounds, I'd be all for it. But they offend my ears a little
they
bit.
They sound very much like your Game Boy 20 years ago would have sounded.
Right.
Which is, there's like a charm to that when you hear it once or twice.
Yeah.
It's like when you hear the Pokemon cries and you're like, yeah, that's what it sounded like on my Game Boy Color.
Mm-hmm.
But it's no longer that. Like, I kind of want my Pokemon cries to sound maybe more like a real thing.
Cricket tune just came straight to mind.
Deli Whoop. I love Deli Whoop. Oh, it's great.
It wasn't tangible. Oh, yeah, like Geomancy with Xerneas, that fast move, it just does lens flares. Because they made it a fast, like a lock-on type move. So it just spams this like circle of light.
Yeah, because
my phone struggles with this.
It's Xerneas's like big like aura move that it uses, and this is like, no, do it again and again and
it
again.
Looks like a high level Final Fantasy spell being cast over and over again.
Well, like in the main series, it takes two turns to use one Geomancy.
Right.
And in Pokemon Go, you've probably got to a Moonblast at that point.
Right.
All right. Well, awesome. There is a question on here, and I think we actually kind of touched on it a little bit, but I'm curious to see if you're going to answer it in a different way. So what type of other content do you do that sets you apart from other people that are similarly in your space? I think you set yourself up in the first place to be rather unique with the sorts of like activities and things and like tying into your local community and dual casting and stuff like that from the get go. But if somebody on the street asks you this and they don't know all of that, what would you say or give an example?
I mean,
I suppose
I kind of mentioned the two things. I think there at this point, there's basically two things that I do on the regular that are still unique in the Pokemon Go space. I think the battling stuff at this point, there's so many people battling on Twitch, and that community has gotten so big, and the available content creators have gotten, there's so many of them now, which is fantastic. I love the ability to actually, I don't know, raid somebody when my stream is over without having to be like, there's nobody alive. But obviously Trade Wars has persisted and has become, I mean, as far as I know, really the only regular trading content that occurs with any kind of fun. And then, you know, I think I'm the only person on the planet who actually cares about that Sightseer badge. And I did make a series of videos last summer, when I was sort of getting into that badge, where what we were doing, the initial premise was like, okay, I'm going to go somewhere and I'm going to use the game map and the site and while doing sites here, and just, that's how I'm going to do the whole city. So I can only eat at places that are Pokestops. I can only like, and so it was like a whole thing where that was sort of the case. I did some chatting with folks and we realized that, well, that's very funny. It would be better to just make a good travel video than it would be to limit myself, say, to only places that are Pokestops. I still kind of do it. And I will still sometimes like be like, this place is a Pokestop, so rad. But I have kind of gotten away from that limitation. But I made, I think, 6 of those last year. There's 3 of them here in Seattle. And then I made 1 in Vancouver, BC, 1 in Oakland, California, and 1 in Germany when I was there for GoFest. And so all of those are there. I do still, I haven't made one in a while, but I still do on platforms like, you know, the former Twitter. I will post like daily recaps of, you know, where I go and sightseer days when I'm doing that. So I'll do those in Mexico City if I don't get around to making a video while I'm there. But generally, you know, it's kind of, those are the things that I feel like are kind of unique. But ultimately, like, I think there's a still room in the PvP space for, there's so many people in that space who are very good. And a lot of our streamers are, their claim to fame is essentially that they're really good at the game. That's never really been my claim to fame. You know, I do it because it's fun, and I like doing it because it's fun. And that difference in ethos, I think, does make a pretty perceivable difference in the kind of things I do, the kind of battles I do, the way that I approach my battles, and the way that I'll still get into tryhard mode on occasion. But I think that there's a different relationship between watching someone like me. You've done more battles than I have this season, Lachlan. Like, if you're at 492 wins on that badge,
we don't talk about the fact games. I've done more battles than DeFi either.
Yeah,
it's
you've
scary.
Won more games than I've played this season. Because I've gotten to that point where I'm playing battles when I like it and I'm happy with it, and when I have to have content, which is a whole nother element of that does kind of put pressure on it. Like, I need YouTube videos. So I did more sets today than I probably would have because I need some YouTube videos for later this week. So,
sure.
You know, but at the end of the day, what I think you'll find from watching, you know, if you watch me do GBL, is that I try and maintain that healthy relationship with it. And if I'm getting tilted, if I'm not having fun, you're going to see me put my phone down and do something else. Like, I'm going to go play Scarlet and Violet. I'm going to work on, I've got a shiny living dex that I'm getting close to finishing. Or I'm going to, you know, pick up a different game, or I'm going to throw up some lures and we're just going to sit around and chat, right? Or I'm going to do some inventory management because, you know, that's peak content.
So I'm at currently max Pokemon storage, so I'm catching and tossing. I think once we wrap up today, because it's a spotlight hour tonight and it's a 2x dust spotlight, I need at least 500 space.
It's pumpkaboo for you. And
and I don't
tomorrow.
Have that shiny. It's like,
well, then you definitely
we could catch those double XLs for the showcase.
You mean Smoliv showcase?
That's what I meant from the get-go. That's right.
Return of the Smoliv.
Oh, yeah.
What I really like about how you kind of wrap that up, though, Ken, is that when you talk about diversity in a space, people don't really ever talk about, like, ideological representation. And that's kind of what this is here. I think you're 100% right that there's plenty of sweaty content. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there's still space, and you fill the niche of, like, hey, like, I just really want to hang out with people that are interested in PvP. I don't have to be doing meta stuff all the time, and maybe we'll do other things. But, like, yeah, it can get really, really tiring going at 110% all the time, and do see the highly competitive people be like, I gotta stop for 3 weeks because they can't keep up, you know.
Yeah, and I do think that that's something that, like, I think when we talk about where PvP fits into Pokemon Go, I think right now there's a general perception, if you were somebody who doesn't know much about it, that there's no point in to be casually into this, that you either need to be like really into it or you need to not touch it. And I think that's kind of what we get to people. And some people, that's true. Some people are like, if I can't figure out how to win at this, I'm going to be mad and I'm not going to want to play it. I know lots of people who are like that. But at the same time, I think there is plenty of room for players to just have fun with it. And if you like a Pokemon, play with it and just do the best you can and do the best you can to learn. There's plenty of good rewards functionally just for playing PvP. And I do think that, you know, among the stuff that's in the game, it's among the most interesting and rewarding things we have. I think the gameplay mechanics are simple, but surprisingly complex. You know, I think there's an elegance to the way that it's designed that isn't present in most other places in the game. And it's also the only place that like 70% of the stuff in your inventory has any use, because frankly, raiding and rocket battles, there's only a handful of Pokemon you actually use for that. PvP is the place that your stuff is useful. It's the place where a Sableye or a Azumarill actually is good. And you actually can do something with it. And it's so great to have like a purpose for all this stuff that you're keeping.
And that's one of my favorite things when talking to VGC people who play Go but don't understand Go at like a PvP. Like, but why Lickitung? But why Gligar? You don't have Eviolite. I'm like, well, Gligar gets Earthquake, which is currently better than Dig. And they look at Gligar gets Dig, which is currently better than Earthquake, and they just look at you like, huh? But yeah, Earthquake go boom.
Yeah. And I mean, there's obviously a ton of that, but that was like that was the thing that really caught me initially with PvP was that because I've always been a bit of a collector. I like having a whole inventory full of nonsense. You know, my anyone who's watched me do inventory management on stream knows that I am definitely a little bit type A when it comes to how my stuff is organized. And boy, oh boy, was it super cool to find out that a bunch of this extra stuff that I've kept was actually useful for something. That I could actually, you know, when I catch a Pokemon, there's now two or three good outcomes. And not just, oh, is it a hundo? Eh. And it feels great. And it's really, really cool to have a feature in the game that actually does take advantage of all of these different Pokemon that we have and gives many of them a place to shine where they didn't shine before.
And I love that Niantic as a company is starting to embrace that more, even though it's a smaller faction of their community. We see the people who actually watch competitive Pokemon Go is significantly higher than those that participate in competitive Pokemon Go. And now that we have tools in-game like the ability to search for 0-1-2-4 attack, it might not be what we want of 0 to 15, but just those scales means that during a community day, we can do those quick checks for not zero attack, transfer.
Right.
And then deal with the rest later. And these quality of life things that they bring in. And because of PvP, we get more new moves more regularly. And moves do different things. Like without PvP, I don't think we would have seen moves like Trailblaze hit the game this early.
Right. So, and sometimes those moves end up being handy elsewhere. I'm pretty confident the reason there's a Brutal Swing Tyranitar in the game is because they're like, well, we're already adding moves on a regular schedule, and PvP opens the door to stuff like that being, you know, being a thing. So, you know, I think I've always argued that it's the best and only real end game content they've offered us. It's the only thing in the game that really fits that bill. You can build your own end game in Pokemon Go, right? They certainly didn't design Sightseer to be something that anyone would try and do heavily
multiple
for a whole
times
year.
Over.
But because you can sort of choose your own adventure, if you're someone like me and is able to self-guide like that, there's a billion different endgames in Pokemon Go. But and PvP is the only one they've really given us explicitly as like, here's a place for you to spend your excess Stardust. Here's a place for you to really like dive in and practice your skills. They really have built it out that way. Whereas I don't think we have a comparable feature for PvE content right now. We just don't have something like that yet.
Yeah, rest in peace, gyms.
Yeah, like gyms aren't anything.
And most raid
like,
bosses,
raid challenges,
same like four Pokemon that you need.
Yeah.
Yeah, EX raids were that for a while.
Yeah. I would love to see some form of raid challenges or raid difficulty where you could like stack up difficulty and you got a bonus for like, but that those sort of features just don't exist yet. Or I've always said, you know, collection, like I loved Pokemon Legends Arceus. And one of the cool things about Pokemon Legends was a Pokedex wasn't just, did you catch this Pokemon? It was like all this whole list of things that you could do with it to learn about it. You were researching Pokemon. And then, you know, you unlocked basically a bonus for fully researching a Pokemon. But you could do that, something like that here. And it doesn't have to. Some of those were very, very tedious. It's not a perfect solution. But at the end of the day, for somebody who likes to collect, opening up that kind of end game where you can like unlock something cool for your Pokemon by doing a number of research tasks with it would be really cool and would give you a goalpost to move towards. Whereas at this point, like, you know, completing your Pokedex is kind of trivial if you are somebody who actually really wants to do it. Trading has functionally made it trivial.
And like with that, they've sort of started to seep that in with the size mechanics in the Pokedex, with the scatterbug, where you have to work towards earning the different scatterbugs to get more scatterbugs for the resources to evolve into Vivillon. You know, like they're starting to integrate these things. And I know as many people hate having to evolve Pormo into Pormot, adventuring 25 kilometers with that buddy is doing something different than just pressing a button and it's done and you don't interact with the game anymore. And in the main series, you did have to run around with it running behind you. So
at least I'll allow them that one. It's on theme.
Yeah. So be ready for Bramblegast to be the same way.
We've come a long way since the evolution roulette.
Yeah, exactly. And there's a lot. Again, I think anyone who doesn't think Pokemon Go has in many ways become a much better game has not remembered 2016 very well.
Yeah.
The first couple years of Pokemon Go were bleak. There was not very much going on. And I think that while there's still a lot to be desired, there's been missteps along the way. We have a fully featured game at this point. And yes, it can be better. But honestly, you know, I think the core gameplay of Pokemon Go is pretty much where it needs to be to keep people playing indefinitely. It's just a matter of how they handle content going forward. Eventually, they're going to run out of Pokemon to release.
And well, like maybe the new group play feature, which as we're recording this has dropped for me, but hasn't for you two yet. I have someone who lives nearby me who I was able to test it out with before we started recording, and it works. They've actually launched a feature that works. Yes, there are some known issues where it doesn't quite track correctly with Go++ catches and some other niche things where if you're on Android and you turn off location, your friend's still appearing on the map with you. But on a spotlight hour or community day, you can partner up with your team, work towards little shared goals that give you extra rewards. And I think that's really cool. And you can compare stats at the end of the sessions. So this is another way of changing the way that we play in a way that doesn't interfere with what we're doing, but just makes it more fun and more collaborative. And, you know, as many people in this environment are sort of introverted, I understand that it's hard to go out and play, but this is a really good feature when it comes to getting people to go in and, you know, play together. Now, Ken, lastly, before we move on to our standard questions, Mexico, you mentioned it a couple times.
Yeah.
This episode may or may not be out before Mexico, but what have you got planned? What are your hopes? What are your goals? Well, I'm not, Chris could put this out on Christmas Day and I'm not going to be bothered.
Maybe I will.
Well, what's your personal goals for Mexico?
Well, let's see. Personal goals. To eat a lot, all the things.
My man,
things.
Dude.
I'm a food person. Like is my number one goal while traveling anywhere. I've never been to Mexico City, so this is a first time, first country. I've never been to Mexico actually, despite being on the west coast of the U.S. and living fairly close. I've never been, so I'm really excited about just getting to go somewhere new. Food, obviously. Personally, food. That's the thing I most want. As far as in-game, obviously, I have some goals. I mostly want to finish the Sightseer goal for the year. I'm 600-some stops off, which
you got
should be absolutely easy on just the two City Safari play days. Basically, you know, if I just simply don't play in the exact same area both days, it should be an easy finish, which will be nice because the fall here in Seattle is not a great Sightseer season. It's actually pretty poor for it. So if I can lock that in, I can sort of take a break from thinking about it for the rest of the year. And then I'll probably, you know, go into 2024 with a new goal.
50,000.
To be perfectly honest, I thought about it.
You think you could if you stick in some more trips? You probably could do it.
25,000. I mean, the best way to think about this is that...
I love that you smiled when you were saying that. You're just like, you know.
You know.
I've spent many an hour thinking about this.
I was at just over 4,000 Pokestops in May of 2021. So that's a year and a half. And I've done close to 25,000. And there's been huge stretches of that time that I haven't done anything. Those have been very heavily loaded on a couple big international trips. 25,000, I mean, you're looking at a lot. That's a lot of stops. I think if I had full rain travel, if I was really like, I'm going somewhere, you're basically looking at spinning 2,000 new stops a month, which you could do over a long weekend in a dense city.
Yeah, right? Or backpack through Europe for 2 months and just knock it all out.
That would do it too. There's a small chance that I may end up relocating to Europe at some point in the next couple of years.
Oh,
in
which no case, kidding. Okay.
Yeah, I'll just hop on trains and it'll be fantastic.
Yeah. I don't know what the czar is in American.
I know they don't exist here.
You just have those
the real
one
answer
lines.
Is.
Yeah.
is the second line happening yet?
No.
Seattle's second line's coming soon-ish. But 25,000 a year is probably ambitious. I think that would require me to do some stupid things.
It's a doable, but it would consume you to a degree.
Yeah, I would have to be literally everything I did. And it would, given that as much as I enjoy it, it's not the core piece of my content right now.
Yeah, you're not a sightseer trainer exclusively.
Not
right?
yet. Like, I mean, I've thought about it. It's the thing I like. Yeah. And also nobody else is doing it. So like my real secret end game goal is I want to pass every legitimate player that I know who on Sightseer. And I haven't quite done that yet. I don't have, if there's anyone out there who knows who might be the top legit Sightseer player in the world, I'd be very curious to know. As far as my fellow content creators go, there's a couple people still ahead of me. I know that
really?
Trainer Club is still ahead of me. Oh, he travels a lot.
And he goes hard.
Nick is nowhere near. I passed Nick last year.
I know he doesn't play like hard. I just know he travels a lot. So I thought maybe.
I passed Nick and Zoe last year.
Nice.
I passed Fleece King this year. I passed him while we were in New York.
Fleece is a big one. Oh, I think I remember you giving him a hard time about it.
Oh, I was giving him a hard time about it.
My man.
I was harassing him about it. Because it's the only thing I'll ever pass Fleece King on.
It's just fun.
I know
maybe you'll
Billy
start,
shared
it's
his number.
To start than Fleece.
Yeah. But Billy shared his number, I think, before I went to New York, and he was at like 28,000 or something. So almost certain I have not passed him. One, because I'm not even at that number yet. But two, because he'll obviously put up some numbers along the way. But I intend to do that next year. The only person that I know on the content creator side is much, much higher is Brandon Tan.
Yeah.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
I know he's in the 30s, if not mid-30s, low 40s. So, you know, he travels a lot. He plays really hard. So I'm not surprised, but I don't have an actual number on that. If anyone knows that number, I would love to know what it is. But my guess next year is that something like another 10,000 ish is probably what I will aim for. Cause that's more or less what I aim. I think I did 12,000 and change this year.
Nice.
And that has a ton to do with the fact that I knew I was going to go to Japan and I knew that would be a massive, plus, but something like 10,000 is a much more reasonable number for, you know, the fact that I'll probably take 3 or 4 trips max next year. But I would like to at some point be able to honestly claim that I have the most of legit players. It's so hard to compete with folks who can just pick a city and walk around it all day without having to worry about any of the physicality.
Sure.
And it's really also hard to know necessarily who has that and who doesn't. Yep. You know, I'm sure that if people just posted their Sightseer number on Twitter, there'd be a lot of very big numbers, but you'd have no idea what's
the
legit.
Circumstance. Sure. Yeah.
I have an idea of what is possible because of how extensively I've been doing this.
Yeah.
But the simple answer is that, like, I wouldn't know. If somebody posted a number with 60,000 at this point, I can't say it's impossible. I would just say it's improbable.
Yeah.
It requires something very special to have happened, right? I had somebody say that they had, like, recently had literally taken a trip around the world. Like, they had taken, like, 3 months off and done that. I'm like, makes sense that your number would be quite high if you were playing the game. Like, you spent an entire year traveling, right? But it's so hard to know what's legit and what's not in this space, yeah. because there's just not a, there's not a, there aren't very many benchmarks because people don't really share it.
No. And like, you know, XP and stuff were like the big ones that people were focusing on that had those global spreadsheets. So I think mm-hmm. you're right. That Sightseer is a bit niche.
Well, Sightseer was on the TL40 report, but people weren't reporting it.
Yeah. Oh, sure.
That's how, one of the reasons I know roughly where Brandon Tan is because he did post a Sightseer number at some point, and it was a couple years back, and it was in like the low 30s.
Is TL40 still around in some way?
So yeah, it's complicated. Mm.
Yeah, okay. The answer is it's not really an active, reliable resource for anything at this point. As far as I know.
Gotcha.
I think they stopped updating the hurdles for like the national decks. That was an acceptable number.
Oh, okay.
I remember there was like a month where I'm like, I've just come back from the US. I caught a confei on the way home. My national dex is this number. No, you can't have that number. I'm like, here's a screenshot of my game showing my national dex is at this number. Please let me put it in. And I just gave up after that.
But yeah, it's definitely the downside to caring about something that most people don't really think about or care about is that there isn't, I have to go out of my way to get people to give me an idea of where they're at. And so I've asked around. I typically, when I run into other heavy travelers, I ask, I want to know where they're at because it gives me an idea. And I know what big legit numbers look like, but I also do not know what the actual ceiling is. So I'm just going to keep doing it until I am the ceiling.
That's right. And at the end of the day, nothing else. Big number go up. And that would
be
great.
The very best spinning like no one ever invisible was. Discs that only you can see through your
phone. I've gone to so many places and seen so many points of interest.
Were any particularly pointy or interested or interesting?
Oh, I mean, there's all kinds of fun stuff. Like the
Space
thing is that
pretty pointy and interesting.
Well, like, so. That's what I was also thinking of. That's concerning. we just went straight to there. I'm like, I hugged you both at that building. It must be important.
That's right. That's right. Not at the same time. So that's still on the checklist, I guess.
There you go.
I'm pretty sure I pulled Alfie into that group hug.
Maybe you did.
You just, hey. I think you couldn't see him. It was just a big group hug.
Pile of trainers at some point in time. Like,
Now, we do have a standardized question, which we're going to try and ask all of our guests, Ken. And we're wanting to know, what is your dream Pokemon? This could be a regional variant, a brand new Pokemon based on some creature, non-living creature, like a computer mouse, a calculator, whatever. Or like a new evolution to an existing Pokemon with a certain theme to it. So what would be your desire if you could talk to the people at Creatures Inc?
Dream Pokemon. Gosh. I'll give you two things.
Ooh.
One is just make Love Disc evolve into a Alola, please.
Even if it's like a regional variant, like
close
the
that
next
gap,
generation.
Please.
Yeah, no,
it's
you're
like
right.
The Americana region.
Yep.
And in Americana, Love Disc evolves into Americana Alolmola.
Yeah. Yeah. just close that gap. As far as like new Pokemon go, I mean, obviously there's so much well trod like stuff. The one I'd be really interested in is I really like regional variants, and I've always really enjoyed how they've been doing those. I'd like to see them regionalify Ho-Oh and Lugia, but give them the actual types that they should come with. So it would be Fire Fairy for Ho-Oh and like Water Psychic for Lugia or something like that. Like Lugia, I'm open to this one. I just want a Fire Fairy regional Ho-Oh. I think that would be rad.
No, we got to fight for the water type and on Lugia because he's like Master of the Ocean or whatever.
Yeah, it should be water. I just don't know if it should be Water Flying or Water Psychic. I'm leaning to them both losing their flying type.
Yeah, I think Water Psychic is strong.
Because that was my complaint with the Galar birds is they kept the flying type, which I think was the wrong type to keep. I think they should have kept the non-flying type.
Yep.
And made them fighting electric, fire, dark, and ice. It would have been ice psychic, I guess.
Yeah. That would have been sweet.
And that would be cool.
That makes sense, though, too. And then the workaround for fairy for Ho-Oh is that fairies generally can fly even without using their wings, right?
Yeah.
Just kind of.
Yeah.
And then for psychic, you just levitate. I mean, look at the movie. Lugia flaps its head, its big arms, but they're really
not really wings. Yeah. They're fingers. They have fingers.
Yeah. Those are arms.
Yeah. They're gloves. They're arms in gloves, but it's like a bad wingsuit.
Yeah, so I'm with you. Those are really good answers.
Those would be high on my list. I'd be really excited about those.
So, for your context, the last guest we had on cricket, her request was a Pikachu in a costume.
Rave costume with a unicorn headband.
Yeah,
I'll give this one. We talked about this on stream. I'll give this one to Niantic free though. We should do a Pikachu Community Day Classic. It should come.
Yeah,
Surf Pikachu Community Day Classic, but it evolves into Alolan Raichu.
Yep.
Okay.
I'm here for that.
So we could run that back, but give us a one-day Alolan Raichu Evolve event. I think that would be.
And all previous costumed Pikachus in 2 kilometer eggs. I want that
lightning bolt Pikachu.
That would actually be pretty funny.
Super cool. Because some of those are really rare.
Yeah.
You know? So, yeah.
You just hatch a Pikachu with balloons out of an egg. How did this happen?
Hey, if Whelmer can fit in that egg, anything is possible.
Anything's possible.
All right. So actually starting with the last episode, Cricket introduced this really great idea of also having our guest, if they'd like to, pose a question to us at the end.
Sure.
So one?
Yeah, I have a question for you. I think we're all wondering this. It's more of a general state of Pokemon Go question as opposed to a real personal one, but what exactly needs to happen for them to actually release Galar Pokemon? Like what dark ritual do we need to enact? Who needs to be sacrificed? What's the gate that got closed where all these Galar Pokemon are chilling? Because I want my boy Cramorant, and right now it's not looking like it's happening anytime soon.
Yeah, you're in good company with the Cramorant wanting for sure. I mean, I think the real answer is when they stop having things they need to cross promote, for sure. But you coming from a marketing background, of course, that's obviously the answer. But at the same time,
the next Go Fest should be the festival of Go Galar.
Wouldn't it be amazing if the next tour was actually Galar Tour and they just like pulled the rug out from underneath us and skipped to the
head? Nobody
wants it.
All right, Ken, thank you so much for joining us. It has been an absolute blast. And just let's remind listeners, obviously, who have been seeing your face on YouTube and Spotify. And if you haven't been watching it on YouTube and Spotify, here's a reminder that you can watch this on YouTube and Spotify. But if they want to see more of your beautiful face and more of your beautiful voice, where can they find you again?
So primarily you'll find me over on the twitch.tvs. Username there, like on every platform, is Alfindiol.
And spelling's in the title of this episode if you need to help with that.
Because I'm an idiot and I picked a name that I had to spell every time I plugged my things.
I also spell Lachlan to people. It's okay.
I honestly would struggle a little bit. I think there's the last vowel I wouldn't be 100% on, unfortunately. But it is what it is. I do keep a pretty regular upload schedule on YouTube as well. If you can't catch the stream live, I do stream basically US Pacific time afternoons almost every weekday. And you can also find, I talked about the Sightseer videos and stuff. There's a playlist of those on YouTube as well. Those are honestly the most fun I've had recording videos in a long time. So if you like food and Pokemon, the intersection is probably more food than Pokemon, to say the least. But they're there. I always fun when somebody finds one of those videos and is like, I liked this. I'm like, yay. It didn't go to waste.
I watched all of them.
Can
we get a medal
for number of people. I'll send you one. You get a platinum badge. You watched all 6 of these videos. You also get to watch me learn how to shoot and edit videos in real time. I literally, the first video I made, it's pretty clear it's the first time I've ever done this. And by like video four, it's like, oh, you actually kind of figured out how to make these. Yeah. Like video two has like a whole segment of it that's weird because I accidentally recorded it in double speed. So like there's whole segments of me walking around that's like, you are walking fast, homie. It's like, no, I'm not.
I'm not. No.
It has a button where it, if you hold the thing, it records faster. I don't know. Mistakes were made.
Jeez.
But they were really fun to make.
But if people want to check that out, they can check that out on your YouTube channel.
Yep.
And then you're also on Twitch, like we were talking about before. Yep. Elfindial, pretty much anywhere, just like you said.
Anywhere right. You want to find me. I don't typically, I just am too old for some of these platforms that I'm on.
And TikTok moves real fast, man.
TikTok
moves real fast.
As the youngest of the three of us, TikTok is too young for me.
I understand the value of it from a content creator standpoint, but from a human being who has to make content, I cut some stuff and put some stuff up there, but just wasn't really feeling it. And you know, ultimately, a lot of these platforms, I've just decided like, hey, I will do what I can, but I also came out of professional marketing where I was living on social media before this, and it was my least favorite part of that job. And it kind of remains my least favorite part of this job. Like, I don't do well with that much information. I know I'm susceptible to doom scrolling and just getting like falling into those traps. So I try and avoid it as best I can.
Well, good on you. Fighting the good fight every day that most of us should be fighting, but probably aren't. All right. Well, we'll have all the links to all of your good stuff in the show notes. This is a good time as any to say thank you again very, very much for joining us on here, Ken Elfindial. We really appreciate you and your time. All right. Okay. See y'all later. Thanks for listening.
See you guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye.